Rich, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 15th, 2007. I sponsor others, and I have a sponsor. This is my home group for the summer while I'm here. This is my first home group, and I feel really indebted to this group, and it's an honor and a privilege to speak here. My first sponsor, the first night I met him, he told me to come back next week and make this my home group. And I remember when he told me that, I felt something in my chest, like just get a little bit lighter. Because I think like before I came here, like I saw Tampa Bay Young People's Group, and I felt like a little uncomfortable and like hanging out with young people, because I never really felt cool, and I always had to like drink to fit in, you know, like I felt insecure and socially awkward and stuff like that. And like I was used to like when I met a new group of people, like getting drunk beforehand, and like that would give me confidence and then people would like me. And I came here and I was sober and I was really worried what everybody thought of me and stuff. And I had all these, like, I remember the first night I called my sponsor and I was all like worried about all these newcomer things. Like I didn't know how to live a sober life, and I was like, can I play video games? Can I take NyQuil? You know, like all these questions. I didn't know like what this entailed. And he's like, just come back next week and make Tampa Bay Young People's Group your home group. And keep AA first, and I promise you that everything else will work out. And that's been true so far, you know. And I just remember that feeling I got when I was a part of, like, right away. And, yeah, I'm just really grateful, you know. One of the first things I just want to say off the bat is, like, I thought that I couldn't have a good time without drinking. Like, I really honestly thought that if I had to, I was so worried about stopping drinking, because I thought that would be like the death of like everything fun, you know, like I would never be able to enjoy myself again or relax or anything good would ever happen again. And this group taught me that is absolutely false, like absolutely false. Like I can just, like, one instance that I always think of is like in my first year of sobriety, we were bidding for Ficky Pa or something like that, and there was this dodgeball tournament down in South Florida, and we put together this ragtag team, and like there was like 15 teams down there, and they all had like jerseys and crazy like uniforms and stuff, and like they were professionals and like took this thing seriously, you know. And there's a trophy and stuff, and we were just like this ragtag group out of Tampa, and we were like the only team from north of like South Florida, and we won the tournament. Like we won, it says intra-city champions for like the city that they were having this tournament in, and we like poured Red Bull in the trophy and drank it like it was a Stanley Cup of AA or something. It was great, you know. Like I made lifelong friends that are still in the crowd, like, here tonight, you know, and I hope it remains that way, you know. And I feel a deep sense of gratitude to this group and the things they taught me when I came in AA. There's this enthusiasm here that I have never seen since in any other group in AA. This was, when I was newly sober, this was absolutely the best AA meeting in the world. And I loved it. You know, I fell in love with AA in this group, and I will always remember that. So I'll talk a little bit about what I was like. I was born into a military family, only child, so I'm like set up for self-centeredness and being a spoiled brat. And we moved around a lot as a kid. We settled in Tampa, Florida. I really identified with Annie, right? I really identified with Annie. Is like I just felt egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I totally relate to that. Like I'm trapped in what I think you think of me, and like that would just like, it would paralyze me, like, just, like, what you thought of me, you know? Like, I was so worried about it that I couldn't do anything about it, you know? And then I would just, like, walk away from situations like, God, I wish I could just be myself or have confidence or something like that, you know? And I would always, like, think of these great things to say, like, right after the conversation was over, you know? Like, next time, you know? Like, and I just never felt right, you know? I never fit in. I wasn't cool. That was, like, the number one thing. I remember I started junior high here in Tampa, Florida. And, like, around that time, like, I wanted to be cool. I really wanted to be cool, and I wasn't. I just always said the wrong things, and I couldn't talk to girls, you know? Like, I really wanted to, like, be smooth with the ladies, and, like, it never worked, you know? I was always clumsy and awkward and weird and said the wrong things. And it kind of went along like that. I never really had a lot of friends, you know, because I was so awkward, and, like, I could never really talk to people or relate. And until I drank. You know, in my junior year in high school, I remember I went to this party with a few people, and it was like your typical coming-of-age party, and they're taking shots in the kitchen, and I had no idea what it was going to do. I just started taking shots, and like I tried to act like I had done it before, like, oh, it burns, going down, this, you got to feel the burn, man. And like I had no idea what was going to happen, and I remember I went directly into a blackout. And when I came out of that blackout, I felt better than I'd ever felt in my entire life. Everything that I ever thought was wrong with me was gone. It was magical. Like, I could just... Suddenly, the hottest girl there was, like, within reach, you know? And that was the most important... That was the most important thing, and the thing I remember most of all was, like, this hot girl. And, like, I just went right up and talked to her and had all this confidence, you know? And, like, everybody was my friend, you know? And, like, I had... I felt great. And, like, I remember that very night. I remember being on my knees because I drove there with two people. And I was on my knees in front of this girl that we had driven to the party with. And I was drunk, so I couldn't drive. And I was, like, acting crazy and bouncing off the walls and stuff. And she was so worried about how we were going to get home. And I was, like, on my knees in front of her. And I just remember, like, just, like, being so dramatic and being, like, it's okay. Everything is going to be all right. Don't you see that everything is going to be all right? Like, I remember saying that, like, trying to convince her, like, because I was overflowing with this emotion, like, everything is going to be okay for the first time, you know? And I remember years later when I was, like, experimenting with all kinds of drugs in college and stuff like that, and I was just, like, so interested in, like, the effects that drugs had on me and, like, alcohol had and stuff like that, so I'd, like, look up all this science about it and, like, personal testimonials about how it felt to be drunk or high and stuff like that. It's called an obsession. And I remember looking up alcohol, because alcohol is always my favorite. I mean, nothing made me feel like alcohol felt. And I remember looking up alcohol, and it said, one of the things it said was one of the effects of alcohol was euphoria. And I didn't know what euphoria meant, so I looked that up. And it said the feeling or sense that, and one of the definitions was the feeling or sense that everything is going to be okay. And more than anything else, that's what alcohol gave me. This feeling or sense that everything was finally going to be okay, you know? And I just, everything seemed to flow from that. My confidence, like hope that everything was going to work out. And I loved it, you know, I loved it. And I wanted to be drunk all the time, you know? Like, I got drunk on a Friday night, and I immediately went out and did the next thing Saturday night. It changed my life. You know, I felt like this nerdy, dorky kid who, like, never fit in. And then, like, that weekend, like, I was a party animal. Like, my life changed overnight from alcohol. And I remember going to school on that next Monday. And does it seem like everybody knew who I was all of a sudden? Like this guy, I remember this guy from across the hall like yelling, "Hey, Rich!" Like everybody suddenly knew who I was. And I had like three nicknames, like Coffee Boy and Superman and like from all the crazy stuff I did over the weekend. And I was like, yes, this is it. You know, I had arrived. You know, I identify with Bill Wilson. We talked about like the sublime moments with Venerable's Hilarious. And I had arrived, you know, because that's what alcohol did for me. You know, it was just like life was exhilarating and it was just good all of a sudden. Like I felt like I was winning at the game of life instantly. And this was what I needed to, like, to function, to live, you know? And I didn't want to go back to the way I was at all. And so, you know, I drank alcohol. I feel like I drank alcoholically from the start, you know? I drank before work, like, right away, like, within the first week. I was like, work is kind of boring, and I like being drunk. And when I'm drunk, work is way more tolerable. So I drank before work, you know? And I remember I'd always be the last one to leave parties. I was like, 16, so we had house parties. I didn't really go to bars or anything. And we were always partying in somebody's house, and I would always be the last one to leave. Like, I would always be there where the alcohol was, you know? Like, I did not want to separate myself from the alcohol. And everybody else would be gone. And I would still be there drinking or blacked out or passed out or whatever. I would keep going. And even among, I think everybody else was there trying to get drunk too, you know? I think people liked the effect that alcohol had on them. But I think that, like, right from the very start, I think alcohol had a little bit stronger effect on me. Because I always remember being the drunkest one. And I always just remember feeling a little bit different, you know, about than the way everybody else treated their drinking. Like, it was so important to me to be drunk. I did not do anything after that if alcohol was not involved or drugs. Because I couldn't always get a hold of booze, so I would, like, settle for weed when it wasn't available. But alcohol was really what did it for me. And I kind of went along like that. And at first, it was just good, you know. Like, I don't identify with just chasing my first drunk forever because, like, I remember the first couple years, like, every time I drank, I got this effect. Like, I felt like everything was going to be okay. I got confidence. I could talk to girls. And, like, my life just got better. And then slowly, I started to have problems. You know, first it would just be, like, something embarrassing. Like, I would pass out and people would do funny things to me when I was passed out. Or I would say something embarrassing. And then it was like I would get in trouble with the law a little bit. Like, I remember I got my license taken away. And it was just gradually things got worse. You know, I got my driver's license taken away. But it wasn't too bad. It was, like, going to be expunged when I was 18 or whatever. And it was, like, slowly, worse things started to happen, you know. And I crashed my car a lot. I drove drunk a lot, you know. And I knew it was wrong. I knew I shouldn't do it. But as I saw it, I didn't really have a choice, you know. And then also, like, every time I would, like, make this resolution not to drive drunk, I would decide against it when I got drunk and be like, oh, I'll be all right. You know, and I did a lot of horrible things driving drunk, you know, and I just felt like I felt horrible for driving drunk all the time. And people were starting to get worried about me. I was trying harder drugs and, like, kind of partying all the time. And I felt like to, like, calm everybody. My dad seemed a little bit worried about me. He was like, you're burning the candle at both ends. And he would say, people would say stuff like that to me. And so I was kind of worried also. And I was like, all right, I'll join the Navy. That'll calm everybody down. And, you know, it'll, like, straighten me out. You know, I think a lot of people join the military to, like, straighten their lives down. Sometimes it works, but not for me. My father was an officer in the Army, and so I decided to be an officer in the Navy because I didn't want to be exactly like him, you know. And I signed up for the ROTC unit. I have no idea how I got through the ROTC program because I shouldn't have passed a few drug tests, and I was always drunk. I would just get drunk and not show up for lab, and I would get in all kinds of trouble. And usually it was just like a slap on the wrist, you know, and it was like, you got to watch your drinking. I'd be like, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore, you know. And then in like a week or a month or so, I'd get in trouble again. And I never saw alcohol as the problem. You know, I never really thought it was my drinking that was causing this stuff. It was just, I got to be more careful, you know, or I'm just a party animal, and that's the life I gotta deal with because I'm a party animal. And somehow I graduated, got a commission in the United States Navy, and I was shipped over to Japan. And I feel like in Japan, my alcoholism really took off because in college, in undergrad, I kind of felt like most people, I was around all my high school buddies and stuff like that, and we were always drinking and partying, and I could kind of fit in to an extent, you know, that other people were drinking and partying too. And my life was kind of private, you know, like I had like school, and then I had like my life, you know, and they were like completely separated. You know, I'd go drunk to class all the time, but it really didn't seem to like make my life any worse. I was still able to get good grades, and I was still able to show up to class when I had to. But when I got to the Navy, suddenly things got, my alcoholism just got much worse because suddenly my public life and my private life seemed like really connected. Like, as a naval officer in Japan, they expected you to like set an example for your sailors and stuff like that. And I was this kid straight out of college, definitely alcoholic. And I would like, you know, the first week I was there, I remember being called into the guy's office who I was supposed to be doing turnover with. I was going to take over his job when he was going to leave. And I remember him calling me into his office one day, and he was like, why were you naked in the bar area? Right, the bar area right side of the base was called the Haunch. And he was like, why are you running around town naked? And I had no idea what he was talking about. You know, I used to have blackouts and stuff like that, and I'd be like, so I was like, I don't know. You know, like, I really didn't know, you know? And he's like, all right, well, you got to be careful and blah, blah. And I didn't even remember being naked. And I was like, that's kind of scary. And like I'm suddenly naked sometimes. And then like it was scary, you know. And then it would be like sometimes I would, like in Bill's story, he talks about like having this terrible sense of impending calamity. And sometimes I would like drink all weekend, and then on Monday or whatever I would go to work, and I would just have this like shaky, nervous, like I'm gonna die feeling for no reason, you know. And it was just like I felt really cold, like cold sweats. And I remember I was supposed to be like going around the ship learning about the spaces that I was supposed to be in charge of and stuff like that. And the guy I was doing turnover with, again, like he wanted to take me down into one of the engineering holds and show me my equipment and stuff like that. And he was showing me around the ship and stuff like that. And I just remember like looking down that having that terrible sense of impending calamity and looking down that like ladder and being like, no, I'm not going down there. Just like, no, it was just a ladder, you know. It wasn't really that bad. Like it wasn't anything really that scary. Like there was big like handlebars, it was really easy to go down. I just remember thinking like, I'll probably die. And then I just said, no, I'm not going down there, you know. And like it was weird because like after that I felt so embarrassed that I would do that, you know. And like it was like I was losing the ability to function, you know. And like not to the extent that it would be later, but like I could not control the way my life was going, you know. And I couldn't be the person I wanted to be because of alcohol. But before that, it felt like alcohol was doing everything that I wanted it to do, you know. And I think slowly but surely alcohol was causing problems in my life rather than solving this main problem I had with feeling awkward and not feeling like I fit in and not winning at the game of life. It felt like everything was getting worse. And so that started to happen. They sent me to rehab within like a few months of being in the Navy. And I went there and I was just kind of like, okay, just another hoop I gotta jump through. And I'm really good at jumping through hoops and passing programs and taking classes and stuff. So like when I got to rehab, I kind of like took charge. I was like this young 21 year old kid, 22 year old kid, and there was all these old Navy guys that were like trying to get over their drinking and stuff, and I like totally wasn't like them, you know. And I was just like, yeah, you know, like I'm in rehab. I thought it was like kind of like cool, you know. So I was like calling my friends back home, like, I'm in rehab, you wouldn't believe it, you know. And they're like, that's great, man. And I thought it was cool, kind of. And like I did my like journal and stuff and my plan. I remember telling my counselor my plan was to stop drinking for a year and then drink moderately, you know, and stuff like that. And they're like, oh yeah, that'll work, you know, and like whatever. And like I remember asking the guy when they sent me in, he was like, if you stop for 5 or 6 years, you can thereafter drink normally, you know. And I think it's still astonishing to me how little like some people in the substance abuse field know about alcoholism to this day. And like I was like, okay, cool, you know what I'll do is, and I was obsessed with this for the longest time, is I'll stop drinking for a year. 1 year. I remember before I even read the big book, I remember that year was in my mind. Like 1 year, my tolerance will go down and I'll drink like I was 16 again, you know. So if I get out of rehab, I'll just stop for a year. I also remember my buddy, I love drinking with him, and I was like, if I stop for a year, I'll still be able to drink with him before he leaves the ship. And so I had this big goal of the year. I was out, and oh, one last thing about rehab. So I was really good at like rehab. I feel like I was, because we played softball and stuff like that, and they would like vote a leader and stuff like that. And this one time we voted most likely to stay sober, and I won, like most likely to stay sober. And they all signed a softball from when we were playing softball together, and like I thought it was like, and they all cheered for me when I went up there and accepted it and stuff. And then I was drunk 3 days after rehab, and I was like, I guess the softball didn't work, you know, like, so it's requires something more than that. And you know, I kept drinking. Like one story I want to tell about those before I got kicked out of the Navy is, like, I remember hanging out with my Navy buddies, and I was all worried about being an alcoholic, and I was all like, this is why I don't think you should ever ask somebody outside of AA if they think you're an alcoholic, because these guys I was in with were all 21, 22, and I'm like, I think I might be an alcoholic, you know, I go to rehab and bad things seem to happen and blah blah blah. And they're like, dude, you're not an alcoholic, you know, like, you're just like us, you like to party, you know. And I was like, okay, cool. And that night we went to a party, and they had like Everclear mixed with like juice, so it doesn't taste like anything. And I remember, I don't even remember getting that drunk. Like, I drank a big tall glass of it, and like I felt pretty good, you know. And like we hung out and had a good time, and I felt pretty good, but I didn't feel that drunk. And then I remember I just went to sleep on his couch, and then the next thing I remember was like the sound of like rushing water. And I remember coming to and just like urinating all over his couch, and his buddy's like screaming at me, like, what are you doing? Stop! Oh my God! You know, and I was like, oh God, I'm sorry, you know, and I'm like, this is so embarrassing, you know. And my buddy came downstairs and he was like, oh, that's gross, you know. And I was like, I remember trying to make amends to him and like trying to like, I'll buy you a new couch, you know, like trying to send him a check and stuff. And like, I just felt so embarrassed. And like, the next day, we were walking to the train station, and they looked all depressed and stuff, and like they were like, dude, maybe you are an alcoholic, you know. And like, so like if you ever feel like, you know, if your friends ever tell you, if you have doubts and your friends ever tell you they don't think you're an alcoholic, just keep hanging out with them, do what you do, and they'll let you know eventually. You know, I got kicked out of the Navy. Long story short, I kept drinking. I couldn't. One thing that comes out for me is when I was drinking is dishonesty. Like, I just couldn't tell the truth about it, you know. And like looking back on it, like years later, they gave me this one last chance. My department head came in the room for me, and he said, "Tell me the truth. Were you drinking?" And I said, "Yes," or no, that's not what I said. I lied. he was like, "Tell me the truth. Were you drinking?" And I had 6 beers in me, and I said, "No, I wasn't." And I was like so drunk. I was cussing at people at the airport when I was picking up my new boss and everything, and totally lying. And he was like, okay. And he said, if you tell me the truth, I will go to bat for you, and I will help, and I will do what I can for you with the captain. And I said, no. And he turned around and he talked to the captain. I thought it just didn't work out. But it took me years to realize. They gave me one last chance to be honest, to stay in the military, to get my life turned back around. They were going to send me back to rehab. They were going to do what it took to get me sober. But when it comes to alcohol, I'm incredibly dishonest and selfish, no matter how I may act in the other affairs of my life. I'll do whatever it takes to protect alcohol. And I lied to him. He turned around, he told the captain, and then the captain called me in his quarters, and he said, you knew you were an alcoholic. Why did you drink? And I said, he said, you knew you weren't supposed to drink. Why did you drink? And I said, I really didn't think I was an alcoholic. He said, look at me. You're an alcoholic. And, you know, I believed him. I mean, like, I just couldn't stop. I didn't know why I couldn't stop, but I couldn't stop, and I believed him. And I think about that when I hear no human power could have relieved their alcoholism, because I feel like those were some of the finest leaders in the world, you know, those guys in the U.S. Navy. They really wanted me to stop. I really wanted to do the right thing. I really wanted to be a good naval officer and be a good guy, you know. I wanted to do that, but I couldn't. I couldn't live up to that idea. I couldn't. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't. And they kicked me out of the Navy. I came home. I crashed my car a few more times. And, like, when I got into AA this time, I remember reading the Big Book and reading that part about the real alcoholic, you know. And I remember it said, you know, besides being incredibly dishonest and selfish when it comes to alcohol, I also remember the part where it talks about being dangerously antisocial. And I remember getting home from the Navy, and by this time, when I drank around people, they didn't want to hang out with me anymore. My best friend, my parents wanted me out of that, didn't want to be near me. Like, they're always scared. They're always leaving, like, notes on the window, like, please don't drive drunk and stuff like that. And I would drive home drunk, and there'd be, like, 50 notes from my mom on the bathroom mirror, just like, don't drive drunk, don't drive drunk. And I couldn't stop. I could not stop. And what I would do is, I couldn't be around anybody anymore. All my friends were gone. And so I would just buy alcohol or steal alcohol or however I got it, and then I would, like, drink and drive around in my car because I couldn't go anywhere. And so I would drive around drinking. And I feel like that's the definition of disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial, was just I had to be alone. And I was just this unguided missile going on the highways, and I would just, like, black out and end up 45 minutes away at my buddy's house down the interstate, not knowing anything about anything that would have happened. And finally, I got fired from my job. The girl I was talking to said she didn't want anything to do with me. I totaled my car, and I ended up in jail. And I remember being strapped down. They came in. I was beating on the glass and stuff, and the police officers came in, and they strapped me down to this chair. And I just remember thinking, like, a few months ago, I was a naval officer sworn to defend my country's freedom, and now my country is taking my freedom away. And it was such a... I've heard it said before that, like, you hit your bottom when you sink faster than you can lower your standards. And I feel like that's somewhat of what happened to me. Like, I was just like, I could not believe that this was happening. Like, it was inconceivable to me that I was in jail, losing everything, and, like, I had to be strapped down so I couldn't move because I'm such a danger to society because I kept driving around drunk and stuff. And I knew that what was eventually going to happen was I was probably going to crash into somebody and kill somebody, and I was going to live, and they were going to die, and I was going to have to live with that for the rest of my life. And I was just scared, man. I was just scared because I knew I couldn't stop. I had tried to stop numerous times. I tried the experiment of stopping for a year so many times, and I couldn't do it for more than a few days or weeks. And I really wanted to get sober. And I had been to AA and rehab, so I knew. I remember people saying they had years sober in there, and I remember a lot of talk about the steps, and I remember thinking, if things ever get bad enough, I'll go to AA. So I went to AA, and I met my first sponsor, and, like I talked about, it plugged into this home group, and he took me through the steps, you know. And I remember still that first night, that first week of meetings, he drove down from Tampa, and he picked me up in Riverview and took me, like, meetings in St. Pete. And I would, like, my mom would tell him, give him gas money, you know, and I would offer him gas money and be like, nah, man, just do it for the next guy, just do it for the next guy. And I remember 6 months after that, like, sponsoring guys and taking them to meetings, and I had this, like, this breathalyzer in my car. I don't know if they still do it, but you had to, like, hum and blow at the same time to, like, start your car so it shows you don't have alcohol in your system. And I was driving around picking up new guys and stuff like that and taking them to meetings. And I remember people, they kind of felt sorry for me, like, having this, like, breathalyzer, you know, and, like, trying to start my car and stuff in this old beat-up Honda. And they were like, do you want any gas money? And I just remember my sponsor's words coming out of my mouth, just do it for the next guy, you know. And I think that's, like, that little thing there is, like, a good description of what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. The whole purpose of this thing is just do it for the next guy, you know, just carry it to the next, just do this for the next person that comes in the room that needs help. And yeah, so I mean, I did that. I worked the steps. I had a great time here, you know, like I was talking about at the beginning. Like, this group really showed me how to have a good time. I remember in my first week sober, I remember talking to a guy after one of the meetings, and he was talking about IKIPA, the International Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was talking about how he went to this meeting in New Orleans, and, like, he said it was 5,000 people walking down the streets in New Orleans sober. It was mad, and, like, he just, like, the light hit his eye, and it was, like, all magical or whatever. And I was like, I just remember thinking, like, that's kind of lame, you know, like, that doesn't sound that great to me. And I went to my first Ikipa that year. I went to Fikipa, Sirkipa, and Ikipa. And I remember I had a blast. I had the time of my life, you know, like, and I had never been to a bigger party, drunk or sober, you know, and just, I remember just all this enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and we stuck together as a home group. We flew out to California together. We all got a room together. We just hung out, you know, and I just remember being, like, feeling I was, like, a part of something important and special, you know, and I fit in. I remember giving this guy a ride to the home group one time, and he wasn't my sponsee, but I remember I remember driving him to the meetings. I'd pick him up in Riverview because I would kind of like have this monopoly on guys that lived in Riverview to take him to Tampa YPG, and I'd get to talk to him and sponsor him and stuff. It was great. And I remember talking to this guy, and we listened to this song, and what I like to do is, if I like a song, if a song gives me an effect, like, I like to put it on repeat and just listen to it over and over again until I'm completely sick of it, you know? And I remember I'd have buddies back in the day who would be like, dude, just play the CD all the way through. That's so annoying, you know? And, like, no, like, when I get an effect, I'm like, again, you know, again, you know, until I'm sick of it or whatever. And, like, I remember I driving this one guy to the meeting, I had this kind of, like, this epiphany, like, when I was driving this guy, and I remember we listened to the song, and it was, like, really good, and, like, he goes, dude, can you play that again? And I was like, hell yeah, where have you been all my life? You know, like, I just felt like, and I kind of realized, I was like, I'm around a bunch of people that are just like me, you know? And I remember working my fourth and fifth step. Like, what I felt like when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous is that when I got here, you know, there was kind of like the first three steps. And I remember there's kind of this buzz about the fourth step when I was new. And I remember feeling like, and what I know now is I feel like that the first three steps just require like kind of like acceptance, and they're kind of easy to do, and like, yes, yes, I'll do it, whatever, my life's unmanageable, powerless, and I'll go on with it, you know? And the fourth step was like actually required work, you know? Like, I had to sit down and write down stuff and like do homework, you know? And like, I remember there was a lot of buzz about it, and I knew you said I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and that I was, you know, welcome here and I'm a part of right away, and I felt a little bit of that, but I didn't really feel like I was a part of until I actually worked my fourth and fifth step, until I felt like I'd done something, and after that I really felt like a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was kind of disappointed because I thought that after I worked my fourth and fifth step, exactly what happened in the big book would happen, or like I would have this like Bill W. spiritual experience where I would never desire a drink or, you know, any kind of mood altering substance or anything for the rest of my life. And I remember I drank a Rockstar afterwards and I was like, it didn't work, you know, like I'm screwed, you know. And my experience with the steps is that I don't always get the effect right after I work the step. What usually happens for me is I work the step, nothing seems to happen, I continue working the steps, and then I suddenly realize, or I'll just be like doing something random, or something will happen in my life, and I'll recognize that I react to it differently than I would have in the past, or I'll have like a realization like I had with that guy driving him to the meeting, you know? And the effect doesn't always seem to match up with like what the order I worked the steps in. Like, I remember, like, I immediately started sponsoring guys after I got through the 12 steps, and I remember taking guys to meetings and stuff like that, working the steps with them, and I remember doing fourth and fifth steps with them, and I remember them sharing their fears and their resentments and stuff with me, and I just remember feeling one time like, it was when I was listening to a guy's fifth step that I really felt like I got this effect, like, we're all afraid of the same stuff. It just comes in different packages. And there was this, like, I don't know, it felt like my fear kind of left me a little bit. All my fears kind of left me a little bit when I realized that, you know, and I realized we're all kind of worried about the same things. And it just, I felt okay, you know, like, I kept sponsoring guys and working the steps with them, and I learned a lot about the steps just by sponsoring guys, you know, like, I would take them first. So a lot of times I would take these guys who obviously didn't want to be here through the first, like, three chapters, and then they would disappear. And I feel like when you teach somebody something, you learn it 10 times better yourself. And I really, really felt like I learned the first three chapters and the powerlessness and unmanageability really well in my early sobriety. And then what happened was something didn't go my way. I remember it was somewhere in between 6 and 9 months sober. Something didn't go my way. Until then, I felt like I was having a good time. Like, my intro to AA was relatively, it felt relatively easy, and I was like, what's the big deal? This isn't so hard. And I'd hear people get up and share about bottoms and sobriety and how hard their first 2 years were and stuff like that, but for me, it felt like I'm finally a part of, you know, I'm finally fitting in, and like, we're always doing stuff. There's no time to think about yourself, and I don't know what these people are talking about. I don't have an ego, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, something happened that didn't go my way, and I was miserable all of a sudden. I was like, these steps don't work, you know, this is crap, you know, like, immediately, like, just like, this is not the AA doesn't work, you know, like, and just like hopeless and like always complaining, and like I was really upset. I remember doing all these inventories about it and like always complaining to my sponsor, and my sponsor bitch, shut up, you know. And I just kept kind of coming around, kept like listening, kept working the steps. And I remember standing outside a meeting one time, and my buddy said to me, he said, if letting go is hard, then you're not doing it right. And I don't think it was necessarily what he said. I just think it was when he said it, you know. And that's the benefit of going to like a lot of meetings and really like keeping AA first, I feel like, is like you're bound to hear something that's going to help you. And when I went through that hard period, that was the first time I had ever relied on something besides alcohol to get me through it. And I just remember having this feeling like all of a sudden, like, yeah, what am I so upset about? And there was like this, like, I felt like I was pouting. I felt like I had been pouting or like crying or upset for a really long time, and suddenly I just like felt okay. And it was really weird. And then I remember reading the Big Book, and it was like the Big Book had changed. Because I remember reading the third step, the problem, the self-centeredness, and that part where it talks about trying to wrest satisfaction and happiness out of the world. And I remember I suddenly related to it. Like, I had read it before. I'd read it with new guys. I'd read it many times. I was like, yeah, yeah, I'm self-centered. But this time, I had felt that way, and I recognized what my problem was. And suddenly I felt like, yeah, that's it. That's what I try to do. I try to wrest satisfaction and happiness. I try to get something out of this life. You know, I remember, you know, later on, I was sitting in a meditation meeting, like, I don't know, remember if it was shortly after that or before that. I think it was shortly after that. And I just remember having this, like, thinking about what a power greater than myself meant to me. Because, you know, I heard God all the time and power greater than yourself and stuff like that. And I remember thinking about power greater than myself. And I remember thinking, if it's greater than myself, it's greater than my thoughts. It's greater than anything I could ever think. And just, like, suddenly, I had this strange experience. And I suddenly realized that, you know, this stuff is working in my life. Like, I remember early in sobriety, my dad saying to me, when he was driving me to a meeting when I was around 3 months sober, he said to me, you seem different, you seem calmer. And the Big Book talks about that. It says, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. And I was still stuck up in my head with all these neurotic thoughts and stuff like that. And I think after a period of time, I sat and I got quiet for a minute, and I'd been working the steps and applying them in different ways and, like, just, like, sticking with the home group and stuff like that. And I remember I had that, like, this click that, like, power greater than myself means greater than me. And I mean, God is just God. People use God, and I use God too, but God is just like a word, you know. It means something different to everybody who hears it. But power greater than myself was like a definition. It's greater than me, you know. And like, I just remember having this profound experience, and suddenly, like, I had this deep passion for AA and the spiritual experience and stuff like that. And I remember just like running around listening to Sandy Beach and like identifying with Bill's story, where he talked about his spiritual experience, where he talked about needing and wanting God, and he came, and it, you know, and just like I felt like the sense of his presence had been blocked out by worldly clamors, and it's like I had all this energy all of a sudden to carry the steps. Like, I really wanted people to experience what I had experienced, and I'm like, you don't have to drink anymore. Like, I felt all this excitement. And I remember, and you know, I caught fire with AA, man. And like, I just remember my life got really good around that time in my life. Like, it just got really, really good. And I hadn't felt that way in a long time. And long and short of it is, I rested on my laurels. You know, like, I had that experience, and I discovered that, you know, like, just like being enthusiastic about it doesn't always make everybody else enthusiastic about it. And I kind of drifted away a little bit. You know, I think I, like, for many years, I kind of two-stepped, but I barely noticed it as I was going through it. What I did was, I moved to Japan, and I got really resentful at the meetings there. And the first thing I did was, I stopped going to meetings, because I was like, this isn't like Tampa. And just, like, I gave up, and then I had a weird dream, and I talked to my sponsor a little bit, and I went back, and I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot, you know, and thank God. And I started going back to meetings, and what's weird is, it seems like, and when I look back on it, I think God's always been working in my life. Because I remember going over there and thinking, you know, like, this isn't like home, it's never going to be like home, it doesn't work. And exactly what I needed to happened now that I look back on it. I didn't see it at the time, but I moved to this place right outside of Tokyo, and there's like train lines all over Tokyo, just snaking and crisscrossing all over Tokyo. And I remember, like, shortly after I started going back to those meetings, like, right on time, a guy moved to Tokyo and he lived on the same train line as me, like 30 minutes farther away. And he was brand new. He had used, like, right before he got on the plane to come over there. And he asked me to sponsor him at one of the first meetings I started when I started going back to meetings. I didn't stop going to meetings for that long, but I remember he asked me to sponsor him right after that. And it was exactly what I needed. You know, I needed to work with a guy. I needed to work intensely with another alcoholic. And he reconnected me, you know, just at the right time. And I remember right before that praying, like, God, please put somebody in my life that I can help. And it happened, you know. And I just, like, when I look back on it, I see that it happened. And I remember sponsoring that guy, you know, and taking him through the steps and just being reconnected to AA. And then he left, you know, and he went home. And I felt a little, like, I started to get squirrely after a few years over in Japan. Like, there would be these Friday nights when I was teaching the Japanese military English. And I would, there would be this energy in the air on Fridays because they weren't allowed to leave the base until Fridays, and then they would be able to go out and drink all weekend. And I remember feeling like really, really bad on Friday nights because I would be like, I was like 26, 27 years old, and I knew that every 26 and 27 year old in the world, except for me, was partying on Friday nights because the soldiers in that class would like get so excited on Fridays, be like, "Are you gonna come out and drink with us?" and stuff like that. And I remember how disappointed they'd be when I'd be like, "No, I don't drink," you know, and just kind of hanging out. And I'd be like, I felt like uncomfortable, you know. And I remember reading the big book where it says you can create the fellowship you crave. And shortly after that, on Friday nights, we started Tokyo Young People's Group, you know. And I wanted to recreate the experience that I had here. And so we created the Tokyo Young People's Group, and people started coming to it, and people started getting sober in it. And that was really exciting. And then shortly after that, this guy came from South Africa, another guy came from Europe, and then there was guys in Japan who had gone to Ikipaz in the United States, and they all started talking about starting a YPA in Japan. And at first we were like eating, like, we were talking about having like a Japanese YPA, and then we were like, no, it's got to be bigger than that. We'll have the whole East Asian region. And they're like, no, bigger than that. It's got to be all of Asia. And we're like, yeah, all of Asia, you know. So we shot for the, you know, the fourth dimension. We're like, we got to start AGPA, you know. So we started AGPA. And people came to that from like all over the world, you know, and it was an awesome thing to be part of, to start that, you know. And we hoped it would move outside of Tokyo eventually, and it moved to Okinawa this year, which is pretty exciting. And also this year, a couple weeks ago, I talked to my buddy Hiro back in Japan, and they've started a Korea YPA and a Bali YPA. So there's two other YPAs, and hopefully next year AGPA can move over to Korea or Bali or whatever, and hopefully it moves around. It was an awesome thing to be a part of that grassroots AA, you know, and like it was a bright spot on my sobriety, you know. But I feel like, I don't know if I have enough time to talk about this. I feel like my I was in a relationship for 3 years during this time, and I think my personal recovery was slipping a little bit. I wasn't taking as many inventories. I was definitely two-stepping, like the 12 and 12 talks about, where I would pray in the morning and in the evening, and then I would go and I would try to stick out my hand to a newcomer, and I'd read the big book of guys and try to think through the steps. But I really wasn't doing anything else. I wasn't taking daily inventories, and I think I got a little sicker because of that. And I had this huge fight with my girlfriend after 3 years. And I remember like walking out to the park and like lying down in the rain and sleeping and just feeling like the epitome of self-pity, you know. Like, I love how much the big book in the 12 and 12 mentioned self-pity, like in 86 or 88, it's like three times, you know. It's like, watch out for self-pity, watch out for self-pity, because I bit or more ass of self-pity, like I'm always stuck in that, you know. Like, I feel like that's like my first instinct is like self-pity, like, poor Rich, man, you got it so rough, dude. And just like, I felt, and that, and I just remember that moment, like lying down, this epitome of self-pity, and just being really depressed. And I called this woman I went to meetings with, because she was the only one I really trust in the fellowship, and she was always talking about, the other guys just talked about, you know, putting the plug in the jug and like, just hold on, man, and everything will be okay. But she talked about hitting a bottom in sobriety and going to meetings and not feeling right, like, and just feeling like, what is wrong with me? After years in AA, I don't feel okay. And I remember like just feeling that same way. Like, I've been sober in AA for years and things aren't getting better. As a matter of fact, they're getting worse. And I asked her to sponsor me, and her sponsorship family was more along the lines of, it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, I sponsor alcoholics. And it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. She taught me a lot about myself. And the number one thing that she was big on was inventories. Deep, long inventories that went way deeper than, I mean, it was out of the 12 and 12 in the big book all compiled into one. I remember taking these deep inventories, and I realized stuff about myself that I don't think I would have realized had I not been through that pain. And I, looking back, I see that I went through that. I believe that everything that happens, it happens for a reason. Everything I'm going through now, all the stuff I'm trying to work on with my character defects, I think it happened for a reason, no matter how bad it was. And I just want to say that. If that's the last thing I say tonight, it's like, no matter how dark it is, because with my drinking it was the same way, you know, it was like I had to go through that in order to be useful to other alcoholics, you know. And I feel like what I went through in Japan and what I've been struggling with for the past few years with my character defects and stuff like that, I feel like that stuff happens for a reason, because I grow in understanding and effectiveness when I take a look at it and when I try to turn the past into good account. And the thing that is of ultimate value in life is experience. And when I now that I've had that experience, I can be more useful to other alcoholics. And I think that if you're struggling in AA or whatever, don't give up, man. Don't leave before the miracle happens. You know, take a look at it. Stay here. Get a sponsor. You know, do what your sponsor says. And you know, don't give up. Like, there's the best times are ahead of us. You know, I believe that. Thanks for letting me share.